late to yours, was it?
There's no way we can get out. It's a good event, though.
No, of course.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. This is the November 8th, 2018 afternoon session of the Portland City Council. Before I ask Carla to read the roll, I want to apologize for my tardiness. Commissioner Saltzman and I were at the ribbon cutting ceremony for the new Beatrice Morrow in Northeast Portland. This is the first affordable housing project that is actually opened under the North-Northeast Housing Strategy. So it's a great milestone for the city of Portland, but I do apologize for my tardiness. Carla, please call the roll.
Udaly?
Here.
Fritz?
Here.
Fish?
Here.
Saltzman?
Wheeler?
Here. Good afternoon.
Welcome to the Portland City Council. The City Council represents...
Can you bring the mic a little closer? Just a little louder.
Okay. Welcome to the Portland City Council. The City Council represents all Portlanders and meets to do the city's business. The presiding officer preserves order and decorum during City Council meetings so everyone can feel welcome, comfortable, respected, and safe. To participate in council meetings, you may sign up in advance with the council clerk's office for communications to briefly speak about any subject. You may also sign up for public testimony on resolutions or the first readings of ordinances. Your testimony should address the matter being considered at the time. When testifying, please state your name for the record. Your address is not necessary. Please disclose if you are a lobbyist. If you are representing an organization, please identify it. The presiding officer determines the length of testimony. Individuals generally have 3 minutes to testify unless otherwise stated. When you have 30 seconds left, a yellow light goes on. When your time is done, a red light goes on. If you are in the audience and would like to show your support for something that is said, please feel free to do a thumbs up. If you want to express that you do not support something, please feel free to do a thumbs down. Disruptive conduct, such as shouting or interrupting testimony or council deliberations, will not be allowed. If there are disruptions, a warning will be given that further disruption may result in the person being ejected for the remainder of the meeting. After being ejected, a person who fails to leave the meeting is subject to arrest for trespass. Thank you for helping your fellow Portlanders feel welcome, comfortable, respected, and safe.
Thank you. Carla, could you please read the first item?
Item 1159, amend ordinance for interim use of the multiple unit limited tax exemption program for affordable housing in housing developments not subject to inclusionary housing to be in accord with Multnomah County modifications.
Colleagues, the adoption of mandatory inclusionary housing prompted many developers to enter their unbuilt housing projects into the city's permitting queue in advance of the inclusionary requirements that began in February of 2017. I've worked with the Housing Bureau to create an incentive program for those projects to still include some level of affordability. In March of this year, the Council approved interim use of the multiple unit limited tax exemption program for projects not obligated to make units affordable under inclusionary housing. The Housing Bureau is back before us today to make some adjustments to the program. Greetings.
Well, thank you, Mayor. For the record, Matthew Schaubold with the Portland Housing Bureau. As the mayor mentioned, because it is a tax exemption authorized under state statute, it requires the concurrence of 51% of the taxing jurisdictions. After you passed the ordinance earlier this year, we've been working with the county, and the county just today adopted a resolution with a modification to the ordinance that you passed. And we're here to walk you through it and hopefully get your concurrence so we can put the program into place. So I'll turn it over to Dory Van Bockel.
Good afternoon, Mayor, Commissioners. My name is Dory Van Bockel. I am the manager of our development incentives team, including our tax exemption and inclusionary housing programs. So as Matthew mentioned, we were at the county today with the same presentation. I'll go through There's probably more detail than you need, so if, afterwards we'll leave room for questions if there's something that you want to weigh in more on, but I'll try to move through it quickly. So just for some background and clarification that Matthew already covered a little bit, when inclusionary housing went into effect in February 2017, it included use of the multi-program as one of the financial incentives provided to help offset the affordable housing being included in the new construction of new developments. And in March of 2017, and then in May, the city and county adopted a rolling cap on the amount of foregone revenue available for use with the multi-program, which kept the original $3 million cap in place, but allowed it to adjust to any housing surges, any cycles of development that increased during a given year, five-year period. And as Matthew mentioned, in March, we were here before you to adopt the multi-program for use of for projects prior to the inclusionary housing, and have just today been at the County Board of Commissioners, who approved a resolution to concur with that program, and we have a couple of slight modifications. The reason and why we are pursuing this is that as of the onset of inclusionary housing in February of 2017, up to 19,000 permits were in the pre-vested queue, so subject to zoning requirements prior to inclusionary housing. The program adopted originally was for the interim use for these projects outside of inclusionary housing was for a two-year period. We have a year and a half or so left of that, and is a 10-year tax exemption for 10 years of affordability citywide with a $3 million cap on foregone revenue that is part of that rolling five-year cap already approved by both the city and the county. And then we also have a $500,000 cap on each individual project applying within the program, making it available primarily for smaller projects. There's no additional fiscal impact that hasn't been considered. The changes made after working through things with the county are two. One is to limit the program only to affordable levels at 60% of area median income, rather than having some options up to the 80% option before. And additionally, making some allowances to increase the number of family size units that might be provided in the program by reducing the total affordable units provided if they are two or more bedrooms. So as of today, the 19,000 units in that pre-vested queue has decreased significantly, but there are roughly 8,400 units, that are still within the pre-vested pipeline. In our investigation of working through that data,
why has there been such a decline?
So a number of those have either moved forward with permitting, and so in our 2018 inclusionary housing update, we do have some more specifics as to what has happened to that actual pipeline.
But, can you remind us, Dory, how long does the entitlement, if they file pre-inclusionary housing, how long does that entitlement last?
It depends on how they reached the entitlement. If it was through a permit process, they have a limited, 2 years of time, but can get extensions. For the land use actions that also could have vested a project, they have 2 years and then also could enter permitting at that point and have additional time. So it's not a set time frame, but yes, at some point some of those would expire.
Thank you.
So at this point, after, again, weeding out then further projects that would exceed the $500,000 cap, presumably have either already moved forward into permitting and wouldn't be eligible or other reasons, we estimate there's a little less than 2,900 units in 42 projects, and so 20% of those units could be affordable. Obviously, we don't anticipate all of them participating, nor would there be room within the cap, but there are definitely projects that could utilize the program, and we have heard from a number of developers who are at least interested in moving forward. As far as the number of projects in the pipeline, they're distributed across the city, primarily on the east side, with a couple in North Portland, and about a third of them, though, in the central city still. And there's plenty of cap authorization. So within our five-year rolling cap of first-year foregone revenue, there's still over $11 million available for the multi-program as a whole, both within this interim use as well as through inclusionary housing. To give an idea of what the value of the exemption is for a particular unit, based on our current pipeline of projects receiving multifamily tax exemptions, it averages out to about $10,000 a year of foregone revenue, or about $833 a month. About a third of that is the portion that the city would forego in taxes. And in comparing that to the benefit to the tenants in these cases compared to average rents within the central city, average rents have been about $2,000, whereas the 60% of area median income rents would be about $800 or $900 under the program, amounting into roughly an $1,100 subsidy. There's still need, obviously. The Housing Bureau and the county both see a need for units across the affordability spectrum. At least 47 to 49,000 units are known to be lacking as far as the housing stock for households below 60% of area median income. And this is one tool that we have to help make some affordability available. We're happy to answer any questions.
Colleagues, any further questions about this? Very good. Thank you. Excellent report. Public testimony?
Yes, we have two people signed up, Gwen Baldwin and Charles Bridgecrane Johnson.
Come on up. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. It's good to see you here.
Warm up, yes, nice.
Mayor Wheeler and members of City Council, Gwen Baldwin. I'm the Executive Director of Oregon Smart Growth, and I'm here today in support of this revised ordinance modifying the multi-program. I want to extend my appreciation to the mayor and his office for engaging with us 20 months ago to find ways to incentivize the pre-inclusionary housing projects to include affordability in what would otherwise be 100% market rate unit production, and to the City Council for acting on this in March and again today. I also want to acknowledge the collaboration with the Housing Bureau and Deputy Director Schubold in working with our partners across the river at the Board of Commissioners to arrive at a program that may incentivize additional family-sized apartments in Portland for those making 60% area median income or less. As was noted earlier, the majority of vested projects and the units associated with have already moved to permitting and are no longer eligible, nor are the vast majority of remaining units that are in the queue with $500,000 in property taxes or that have fewer than 20 units. It has taken a while to get resolution on this program, and my hope is that together we can move perhaps more swiftly with future efforts. We're very, very pleased with the work that has been done on updating the legal templates within the Housing Bureau related to the Inclusionary Housing Program, as well as visiting with you last month related to the 5-to-1 FAR built or base offset package. Those are things that really moved quickly when the need was identified. We do believe that this program revision is important for the opportunities that exist within the remaining viable projects in the pipeline, and I look forward to our ongoing work together to provide the housing needed at all levels of affordability. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. It feels weird to say that. Charles Bridgecrane Johnson, for the record. And as you know, this was at the county before, earlier today, item R4. But I think we want to look at also this in a bigger context. Tuesday night was terrific. We have here in the chamber City Councilor-elect Joanne Hardesty, who's going to be working hard on housing policy, which includes the fact that the city, in addition to over $250 million passed with the city's own bond, is looking to get around another $250 million from the Metro bond. and Measure 102 passed, so we'll be looking for partners. When we're partnering, we don't want to be partnering with developers who thought, oh my God, IZ, I'm not going to cooperate. So in addition to voting yes on this Measure 1159, I think there should be an acknowledgement that there should be an open framework to look at which developers have participated in this program to improve results with IZ or quasi-IZ on these projects in the pipeline, so that when we're doing proposals, maybe in the RFPs, RFQs, for future development on the next, there's not quite a half billion because we've spent some of the first quarter million of the housing bond, but the people that participate in those projects should be the ones that were most enthusiastic in making sure that we don't have 100% luxury buildings, that we don't have developers who are resistant to having a diverse population of income levels within their buildings. So please vote yes on this 1159, but also be aware of who's really interested in quality, diverse housing for all income ranges in this program as you go forward over the next few years and work with the money coming from the Metro bond. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further discussion on this item, colleagues? Please call the roll.
Udaly?
Thank you for the report. I vote aye.
Fritz?
Very pleased with these changes. I'm happy to be able to remain in the chamber and enthusiastically vote aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Wheeler?
I vote aye. The ordinance is adopted.